From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just over a year ago when Monroe County voters decided overwhelmingly to elect Cheryl Donolfo county executive. The Republican was previously the Monroe County Clerk, and throughout her campaign, she pledged to improve the public view of local government by creating the most ethical local government in the country, a new ethics office, the rollback of LDCs, all on the first-year menu. She talked about job creation, flat taxes, and more. And this hour, we got a chance to examine those pledges, the recent budget, job creation. A lot going on this year, and my guest is the county executive, Cheryl Donolfo, who's in studio. It's nice to see you. How are you?
I'm well, Evan. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hanging
I appreciate
in there
the
in this sort of late fall, winter. I was joking that she and I both get sick usually, well, you say once a year.
I get it once a year.
For me, it's usually around Thanksgiving, but anyway, it is really nice to see you here, and I know you're very busy. So you're coming to the end of that first year, and before the program began, I asked you if you... If you had any regrets or you're feeling pretty good about it, a year in, is the job roughly what you expected it to be?
Well, a year in, and every day is a great day in the county of Monroe. Every day is a great opportunity to serve the people here in our community. I'm thankful for the opportunity to work with the fine people in Monroe County and to do good things on their behalf. It's been a great year, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to serve this community.
When it comes to the recent budget, I'd like to start there if we could. And you had talked about the importance of preventing tax increases, of making sure taxpayers are protected. Why don't you just outline, if you could, for listeners who haven't really been tracking what's going on with budgets, what your priorities were and how that sort of played out?
Well, you know, when I started as the county executive in January, went out and met with business owners from throughout the community. I continue to do that, meeting with our constituents, people in this community, and taxation is always on their mind. Whether we're talking about ensuring that our senior citizens and our families are allowed or have the ability to stay in their homes, whether businesses can continue to operate here in this community, expand and flourish and provide opportunities for people to work in our community, property taxes is always on the forefront of most people's minds. So as we looked at the budget this year, the guiding principle was to make sure that we kept that property tax rate flat at $8.99 per thousand of assessed value. And I'm proud to say that the people in my administration, all of our departments, really took a critical look at the budget to make sure that the residents of this community were protected, that their pocketbooks were protected, that our quality of life was protected, services were protected, but equally important, that our tax rate remained flat at $8.99. So that was a challenge. Most communities are faced with increased costs, increased mandates. And so when we look at the budget, you really have to look at a critical eye to make sure that our people here in this community, I made a pledge to keep that property tax rate flat, and I'm proud to say that we did just that.
When it comes to any chargebacks or below-the-line fees, are there new or increased chargebacks or fees?
So one of the beautiful, I think, parts of this budget, and I'm proud to say, is that we had no one-shots in this budget. So there are no sale of, we didn't sell any county buildings. There's no one-shot surprises in the budget, and there's no increased fees either, nothing below the line. So it was that way of proceeding forward, which was with some fiscal responsibility and certainly a critical eye on making sure that I kept the promises that I made to the people here in this community. We will continue with responsible sale of tax liens as we've done in the past, but you won't see any additional below the line charges, one shots, or fee increases.
Okay. Anything you want to add on the budget for? Because there's a lot of subjects to talk about.
I'm glad you're giving me the opportunity. You know, I look at the budget and, you know, you've heard this for years. Every county struggles with the mandates. And, you know, as I look at our county budget, 85% of the county budget is mandated by state and federal government. And I look at that, and it's interesting that it used to be that 9 programs that were mandated here in the state of New York comprised 90% of the budget. Now it's 9 mandated programs actually eat away at 99% of our property taxes. So I look at that, and it's a huge concern. We're always battling against unfunded mandates. They increase every year. We have been asking the state of New York, and I will continue to ask the state of New York for help with mandate relief, because I believe that local control is most important so that we can control our own finances. But if we are going to have mandated state programs, that the state fund it. And equally important, they should be looking at a critical eye to not spend money unnecessarily. So it's very, very important to me as county executive, and I know it's important to the people here in this community, that we take a critical look at unfunded mandates and make sure that certainly we do what we can to advocate against them and to have the state be responsible for programs that they initiate. Not saying that programs aren't necessary, but certainly looking at the mandates as they impact our local families and our local businesses is very, very important. You know, on the budget, we obviously kept faith with the taxpayers. We complied with Taxpayer Protection Act, and certainly it presented a very solid budget to this community. We're in the middle of discussing the budget with the legislature, and it will come up for vote at the next full legislature meeting. Looking forward to having that pass so that we can continue the good work that we've been performing for the residents here in the county of Monroe. The other thing is that we have been able to, in this budget, make sure that all of our services, the vital services that we perform here in the county of Monroe, quality of life services that people are used to and that we will continue to provide them, we are able to do that within the budget as presented. Additionally, we have been able to ensure that there are no layoffs. So there's no layoffs in this budget. We have reduced positions by 2.5 positions by not filling in vacancies. So we're really proud about that as well. In closing the budget gap this year, we really took a critical look at what we needed to do. And part of the success of this budget was shutting down the LDCs, which I promised to do. And I'm happy to report that many people said when I said we're going to eliminate LDCs, a lot of people said, oh, that just can't be done. For those who said, well, you could probably tackle that, but it's going to take you the entire term to do so, we've been able to do that in short order. We did that with great bipartisan support here in Monroe County, also obviously in the state of New York, because it took legislative action in Albany, and the governor signed legislation as well. But that elimination of the LDCs and our budget for next year, we're looking at $3.4 million in savings, which translates into a positive budget for us as well.
Okay, so on the subject of LDCs, there's a lot of sort of things we want to hit there, just to making sure we understand. How many total LDCs were there in the county, and are they all wound down, any being sort of left operational?
That's a great question, Evan. The ones that we eliminated to date, so we eliminated UTC, M3S, and Monroe New Power. Those three were the first LDCs that we are tackling. The UTC and M3S were certainly subject of prior investigative matters, as you know, and the public knows as well. I pledged during my campaign that we would be eliminating those two LDCs and returning essential county government functions to county government, and we've been successful in doing that. Now, Monroe New Power was certainly not part of that inquiry, but I did look at Monroe New Power as an opportunity to eliminate the LDC and to save significant dollars as well because of the way that LDC was structured financially. So we did include Monroe New Power because in doing so, it helped eliminate cost.
Tom on Twitter writes and says, what about the Civic Center LDC? David Moore was a board member.
So on the Civic Center, that's the parking garage, as you know. On the Civic Center, that really is the next LDC that we're going to tackle. So I'm glad he raised that question. The Civic Center LDC is different from the three that I mentioned. On the Civic Center LDC, we didn't need legislative action in order to eliminate it. So when we looked at eliminating LDCs, the LDCs that we did eliminate, the UTC, M3S, and Monroe New Power, we actually had to go and get legislative permission to do so because of the financing piece. Those, when we look at UTC and M3S, the way those deals were structured, we had to assume the debt obligation and also obviously the assets of those entities and refinance them. I don't want your listeners to be confused and misled. We were paying through a different structure. So the county was actually paying the LDC for the services, and we're paying the debt as well under the LDC model. With the elimination of the LDCs and getting the legislative approval to issue debt, we restructured the debt. The terms of each of the debt obligations remained the same, so we didn't extend payment life. But the terms are much more favorable. So we will be saving with the restructuring and the refinancing of that debt. And also we will be saving significant dollars because in eliminating those LDCs, we're eliminating duplicative services, attorney's fees, insurance, administrative costs, and so forth that were part of the operation of the LDCs.
Your predecessor said that LDCs were necessary to save taxpayers money, that that's what it was about, and that therefore winding them down is going to cost taxpayers money. Was she wrong?
Well, you know, it's certainly a different philosophy, and I will say that, you know, LDCs are not unique to Monroe County. There are LDCs in other municipalities throughout the state of New York, but when I looked at the structure, it was not the direction in which I wanted to proceed. So we did undertake day one to eliminate the LDCs, and we are finding that because of the duplication of services, the duplication of administrative costs, attorney's fees, insurance fees, and the like, that there is tax savings there. And equally, there is tax savings in the restructuring and the refinancing of the debt. So there is a savings there. It's a significant savings, as I mentioned. We're looking at $3.4 million in the first year alone, and we're looking at a large number as we go forward.
I promise this is not sort of to like put anybody in a position to speak against a predecessor in their own party. I just want to make sure we understand, because going forward, future executives, or the question may come up, should we go back down this road? In your view, LDCs do not save taxpayers money?
Well, you know, at the time, you know, we look at the borrowing. I mean, the borrowing is a big piece as well. We're refinancing at a much lower rate. We went out for bonds to refinance the LDCs, and the bond rates are extremely favorable right now for those who want to borrow. And that was a good financial decision. As we look back in time, borrowing was in a different situation. The county was in a different situation. So from a finance standpoint, refinancing and restructuring LDCs is a real win for this community and a real tax savings. In addition to that, it's a philosophy. I believe that essential government services should not be in the hands of a third-party vendor, but they should be overseen by people that you elect and people who work in government. And so that was a decision that I made as the county executive. So I'm glad that we did that. I'm glad that we made those steps. And I know that we're going to save money, as certainly indicated in the budget and by what I've presented here today.
All right. Before I grab a couple of phone calls, one more question on sort of the process. Writing in the Democrat and Chronicle, Dave Andrietta said that Monroe County's budget process has been, at least in recent years, not the way other local governments do it. He says, you know, budgets are typically hashed out over the course of months with an executive budget, then committee hearings, some pushback, sometimes within the own party. And Dave wrote, and I don't know if you saw the piece, but he said, look, here, it's rubber stamped. There's not enough actual vetting back and forth. Do you think that's wrong to begin with? And is there a healthy debate about this budget, do you think?
Well, having been the county executive for 11 months, one of the things that I enjoy about the job is the interaction with the public. And, you know, wherever I am, people are very, very free to speak with me, and they do. And I really appreciate that opportunity. And the same is true in the legislature as well. I will tell you that over the course of the 11 months that I've been county executive, for example, with eliminating LDCs, reaching out across the aisle, explaining the process, talking about the process, seeking input, with the creation of the Office of Public Integrity as well, the public comes to our legislative meetings and they speak out on whatever's on their mind. And that's great. That's what democracy is all about. And I'm glad that they feel free to do that. I will tell you that the budget is one that is carefully considered. And I know that we are having meetings with caucus, both minority and majority, and our committees as well on the budget as well. So the vote will be in 2 weeks, and I'm sure that it will be a rigorous debate as well.
So you don't think it's rubber stamped?
I absolutely not.
Okay. Let me grab some phone calls. Mary and Webster first up. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Go ahead, Mary.
This is sort of like being on an elevator. Everyone is quiet for a moment. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to ask do support Uber coming here. I'd love to see them here, and was just wondering your thoughts.
Well, I'm really glad you asked me about Uber. I support Uber fully. You know, when I first became county executive, there was some legislation in Albany to allow Uber to come here to upstate New York. I did write to our legislative delegation to let them know that I'm supportive of Uber. I know that session is coming to an end at the end of the year. I'm not sure that this will be taken up by then if our Albany representatives get back to Albany before that time. But certainly in the new legislative session, I hope that they take up Uber. You know what? It is. I'm all about competition. And, you know, our taxi cab drivers are doing a great job. And I certainly wish them the best. But certainly Uber is well accepted in many metropolitan areas. And I think that, you know, it's good for this area, good for business, good for the people who live here. I know wherever I go, people always ask about Uber. They expect it. And I will tell you from a business perspective, just talking about the business perspective, I can't tell you how many people come here to visit our businesses and say, I wanted to call for an Uber and I've got my Uber app on my phone and there's no Uber. Why is that? And that's a great question, because when we look at, you know, what are people doing in the modern world, Uber is certainly in that world. I know I've got kids in Boston and Dallas
Washington.
I use it all the time mm-hmm. when I'm there as well. It's just well accepted, and not to have it, I think, actually hurts this community from a business perspective, from keeping our young people here, making sure that we are providing the services that people want and they are relying upon. So I would urge, you know, all groups to let your legislators know how you feel
state
about
legislators.
State legislators.
Yeah.
Thank you. How you feel about Uber, and ask them to please support Uber coming here. I know there's been some discussion about rules and regulations on how Uber, you know, should work in the state of New York, but, you know, it certainly can be worked out. It's something that is good for this area, and I'm looking forward to it. So thank you so much for the question, and I bet by you calling, you support it as well. Let your state legislators know your position.
I know the county executive wanted to talk about the airport. Jess in Greece has called in with a question on that, so that's a good segue there. Go ahead, Jess.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
Hi, this is Jess, and I heard you're renovating the airport. What are the plans and when will it start? Will it affect my holiday travel? I have family coming in and out of the airport this Christmas. Just wondering the timeline of all of that.
Thank you, Jess. Go ahead, County Executive. Dill.
That's a great question. So, Jess, it will not impact your holiday travel at all. We're looking to break ground in the beginning, maybe the first to second quarter of next year. But even during the construction project, we have a whole plan in place to make travel as seamless as possible for the people traveling to our airport and traveling from our airport as well. You know, we want to make sure that we continue to provide the great customer service that people have come to expect and that they receive at our airport. And we will do that during construction. But for this holiday season, for anybody who's listening, there is no construction that we'll be undergoing at the airport. But I will say that airport competition that we entered at the beginning of the year for up to $40 million for airport renovations was a really unique opportunity for anybody who wanted to accept that challenge. Well, we took that challenge head on, and I am so proud of our airport director, Mike Giardino, and his whole team, and my administration as well, working together to secure that funding. $40 million of state funding plus another $23 million from the airport itself is going to mean a great facelift for our airport. There's economic opportunity. There's incubator technology, accessibility for our hearing impaired community, upgraded amenities, upgraded security, a new canopy to make sure that our customers are protected from the elements, new security checkpoints so people can get in and out of security much more easily, and a better customer experience with amenities that people have seen in other airports as well. From a standpoint of people in this community, it's something I think that they have been looking for, and it's going to be great. It's going to make a good airport even better. And from a business perspective, we're hearing from our business community that some of these upgrades are something that they're looking for as we go out and seek for companies coming and locating here in this community. The airport is something that they look at with a critical eye as well. So we are so incredibly pleased that we were awarded this grant. When we start the project, we're looking at approximately 1,000 construction jobs that will be ongoing for about 2 years, so 1,000 people from this area employed in the construction realm, which is a real win for this community.
All right, here's an email from a listener named Allison, and this is a question that, Cheryl, I've not had a chance to comb through every line of the budget, so I'll read this question and you can address maybe the premise as well. She just writes, "We're trying to reduce poverty, and Monroe County continues to do a weak job of funding child care programs. Can the county executive comment about why there isn't more emphasis on this?"
I appreciate that question, and I was going to certainly address child care. It's so important. You know, as I talked all last year and continue as county executive, I want to make sure that people in this community are able to go to work. There's nothing like having a job, and we want to make sure that everybody has that opportunity to be employed in this community and to succeed in their employment for many, many years, and certainly child care is one component of that. Now, last year, or this year actually, in 2016, the county's commitment out of county taxpayer dollars for child care was $4.2 million, and that was put in the budget in 16. Now, what I did as county executive was we actually spent an additional $2.5 million that was not written into the budget to support our families here in the community so they could continue to go to work and their child care needs were at least addressed. So as I looked at the budget for 2017 and having met many times with child care advocates, listened to their concerns, listened to our families, I wanted to be able to strike a balance. And I said to our child care advocates, we're going to remain with child care with a slight increase of $100,000 in the budget. But the child care funding would still be a priority for me as county executive as we look at what does 2017 look like. And if we have additional available resources, as we did in 2016, we would be looking at applying that to a child care slots and funding. We also continue to advocate for state dollars for child care funding as well. And I know that our child care advocates have been, again, meeting with Larry Marks and his fine group, and they're looking at the same situation, looking to advocate. We've been working together for child care funding and to advocate at a statewide level. In addition to that, we've started some new job initiatives here in the County of Monroe, and it dovetails nicely with the child care question. Just recently, we partnered with Maximus, and we talked, there was an announcement a couple weeks ago about this, where Maximus had available job slots here in the town of Gates, actually. And I wanted to thank Maximus for the opportunity to work with them. So what we did was we worked through our Department of Social Services to identify people who are eligible, wanted to work in this industry, and provided those names and those individuals to Maximus for them to interview. I'm proud to say that Maximus hired 47 of our residents here in the County of Monroe who were former recipients of social service benefits. Now, part of that is certainly looking at child care, and we want to make sure that the people who are availing themselves of the opportunity to work have services as well, and part of that is child care. So we're looking at that on a go-forward basis as well. But to commit additional tax dollars into the budget on a go-forward basis that's written into the budget was something, given the other constraints, that we weren't able to do. But as we look forward, and if there are available dollars, as there were in 2016, child care would be a priority.
Let's get our only break of the hour and come back with more of your questions and phone calls for the county executive, Cheryl Dinolfo, who is in studio for the hour, and we're talking about her first year, the budget, priorities, job creation, and more. It's all coming up next right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections first hour, it is a new era for the American news media under Donald Trump. We'll talk about covering the next White House, and we'll talk about what the public expects of journalists going forward. Then in our second hour, 500 years since Martin Luther nailed, if you believe the story, his 95 theses to the wall. We'll talk about the legacy of Martin Luther. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The county executive wanted to put a point on something we were talking about earlier as well. Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Evan. To round out the question from the listener on child care, at $4.2 million of taxpayer dollars here in Monroe County committed to child care, that's actually almost four times more than the next closest county's contribution. That would be Erie County. Erie County, their expenditure, their required payment for child care is $1.26 million. And at $4.2 million here in the county of Monroe, required contribution, again, is almost four times the amount of Erie County. And believe it or not, this is something that I look at, and I'm actually in disbelief. At $4.2 million, our required share for child care is more than the combined required share for Erie County, Orange County, and Nassau County. So it's an interesting number to look at. But I do want the public to know that we certainly want to make sure that our families have the opportunity to work here in the county of Monroe and that we're able to continue on.
Okay. Let me grab another phone call. This is Ginny in Fairport next up. Go ahead, Ginny.
Hi, Ginny.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And County Executive, I just want to say that I respect your position as a leader in our community, but I was really disappointed by your silence during the recent campaign in the face of some pretty disturbing commentary and behavior from Donald Trump. And I contacted you a few times by email and was sad that I didn't receive a response on this. But the kinds of things that he did, like mocking a disabled reporter or accusing a judge of not being able to do his job fairly because he was of Mexican heritage, or bragging about his ability to assault women. I sort of felt like your silence in the face of those comments was akin to approval. So I presume that you do not approve of those kinds of comments and behavior. So I guess my question is, is that true, or did you disapprove of those behaviors? Another question would be, why did you remain silent? And the third would be, now that he is our president-elect, are you willing to speak out and take a vocal public stand against bigotry when it appears both from our elected leaders and from other people in our community?
All right, Ginny, thank you for the phone call. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Ginny, thank you for calling. I appreciate your call. And I will tell you that during the campaign, a lot of things were said, from both candidates, many candidates for that matter. But certainly with respect to Donald Trump, I was asked about some of his commentary, especially on the issue of women and treatment of women. And I did speak out and said that I was outraged by his comments. And certainly I would say that when the heat of the moment, the campaigns, I think that people say things that they would regret. And I'm sure that that would be true of the comments that were made during this campaign as well. I will say that we treat all people, and we should treat all people, with dignity and respect. And that's what we should expect, not only of our elected leaders, but certainly of our elected leaders, because we're holding them to a higher regard. So treating people with dignity and respect is paramount. And I would expect nothing more from our elected officials. The fact is that Donald Trump is our president. And I think he's going to do a great job and going forward. But we certainly, as has been seen repeatedly, this country always takes positions and lets our elected leaders know what is on their mind, whether they agree or disagree. That's the beauty of democracy. And I would expect no less, whether we're talking about Donald Trump, whether we're talking about the county executive, the governor, or any of our elected officials.
Ginny used a pretty strong word. Do you agree that our next president is a bigot?
I don't think so. I don't think that's what's in his heart at all. Again, I think sometimes in the heat of the moment, people say things that they regret. And if they...
He's got a lot of heats of a lot of moments, though.
Well, you know, I think that each one of us comes with our own personality. But I do not believe that Donald Trump is a bigot.
Okay.
I do not. I think that, you know, right now we're looking at the beginning of a transition. He's making his appointments. He's shaping his policy. And I think what we need to do as Americans is to, certainly let our elected leaders know what our concerns are, as we always do. This is the beauty of democracy. But we also have to give our elected leaders, whether we're talking about the president or any other, the ability to lead and the ability to get out there and to fully represent our country in a full capacity. And I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like and certainly ensuring that this country goes forward in a positive direction.
In the recent administrations, when I first got to Rochester, Jack Doyle and Bill Johnson were sort of known for not having a very good relationship, and that changed in many ways. We saw, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair reading of history. I mean, and people from different parties don't always get along, but we saw some healing moments over the years. We saw Maggie Brooks and Bill Johnson work together, and I'm curious to know a year in how your relationship with Rochester's Mayor Lovely Warren is.
Mayor Lovely Warren and I have a very, very good relationship. I would consider her to be a friend. You know, all of last year we started to get to know each other in the hopeful event that I was elected county executive. I think it's extremely important that elected representatives work well together. You know, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, the interest is always should be the same. The interest should be how to best represent the people here in Monroe County, which obviously includes the city of Rochester, and to make sure that we put our best foot forward each and every day. And in that regard, the mayor and I have a very solid relationship. We've worked on many things together, whether we're talking about economic development, whether we're talking about the anti-poverty initiative. We have been in many meetings and many events together, working side by side on behalf of the community.
Do you hope she runs for re-election, and would you support her?
Well, I mean, that's certainly for the mayor to decide if she's going to run for re-election. I think she was asked that question yesterday. I believe I read in the Democrat and Chronicle that when she's ready to announce, she will announce. So whoever is the mayor to come, I will continue to work with that person. And if it's Mayor Lovely Warren, I'm certainly looking forward to that opportunity as well. She's doing a good job. And we have really worked well together this past year. And putting in place some very good programs and policies for the people in this community.
This year you had to sort of deal with the issue that came up with fee waivers when you were the county clerk and try to put that behind you. I haven't had a chance just to ask you just a few questions, and I have a pile of questions from listeners. I don't want to sidetrack the whole hour on it, but I think it's important just to ask a few basic, you know, sort of baselines, because the State Department did rule that the fee waivers were in violation of the law. So first of all, I know we're not going to see a list of names. There were 600 or 700 people who had fees waived, but can you give us a sense, how did you determine whose fees should have been waived?
Well, you know, the issue of fee waivers, interestingly, came up during a campaign season. So I think that, you know, that is something that I certainly looked at as to why, you know, why was this...
Do you think
this...
it was political?
I think that there was a political element there, yes. To come so late in the campaign certainly raised an issue. And I think that was actually reported throughout the media as well. With respect to... the issue arising at that time of the campaign, I think you have to look at that with a critical eye. And certainly that issue did come up in a campaign season, and we responded to it appropriately. I will say that in looking at that issue, it was interesting that laws are to be interpreted, and so are rules to be interpreted as well. The interpretation of the application of the a fee for an execution fee of $25. That was one that was interpreted for many years as one that may or may not be collected by the passport issuing agency. In this situation, it would be the County of Monroe. And in fact, what was interesting in looking at that is we found that the University of Buffalo had an interpretation of fee waivers for passports. They were actually collecting fees and giving it to a foundation. We found college universities that were waiving fees for employees and their family members. So certainly that was a rule that was subject to interpretation in various ways. We interpreted it as we could waive a fee, and our staff was had that ability to do just that based on customer service. And we actually asked, at my direction, I asked the State Department on a go-forward basis, what is the interpretation, knowing that it had been raised in the heat of a campaign and it had been applied in various ways throughout the country.
Should anyone have been disciplined because the State Department is saying this was a violation of the law? To my knowledge, there hasn't been discipline.
Well, you know, with respect to that, again, we pointed out to the State Department that, look, your rule, just like any other rule or law, was interpreted in various ways. It wasn't just in Monroe County, it was in other areas as well. So we asked for clarification because as we applied the rule, we felt that we were complying with the rule. There's no question about that, as I'm sure these other entities did as well, or continue to do as well. So the point of getting clarification from the State Department wasn't just look at Monroe County, but we pointed out other instances where the rule was obviously vague and subject to interpretation, and wanted to know, you know, is this the interpretation that you support? And if it is, fine. And if it isn't, can we have some clarification on a go-forward basis? And that was provided.
Okay. And the reason I think people were hung up on it a little, I understand your point that it came up in a political campaign. But you said that it was a customer service issue. There are people in our community who, you know, a $25 fee or fees like this can actually ding them a little, that it hurts some people in our community more than others. Did you waive the fees for people who could, you know, less afford them? What was the basis of waiving the certain fees?
Well, you know, as I stated before, the basis of waiving fees was a customer service base. So our staff had the ability to determine whether or not a fee could be waived. For example, if somebody were online for a period of time that maybe was not acceptable, if they had to come into the office multiple times, that might be one of the reasons that a fee would be waived. Mm-hmm. But it certainly was based on customer service, and that rule was interpreted as such for many years in the county of Monroe.
Okay. And I know I don't want to rehash your husband's situation there, because I think that's technical, and I don't want to bog down the hour with that. But listeners may be curious. I mean, did you pay fees? Did your family pay fees?
Well, you know, with respect to my husband, what's interesting about that situation is there was an issue on notary fees, and according in the campaign of last year, in the county clerk's campaign, it was raised that there was a person who had a notary fee waived. Again, it was the county portion of, I believe it was $20. And it was raised that person happened to be my husband. Well, I'll tell you what, it was interesting that in his capacity as a law clerk to the surrogate, where you notarize documents all the time, that's part of the function of that role, the fee, in fact, should never have been charged. So it wasn't even a waiver of fee. It never should have been charged. That's why this whole issue of the fees and the question of fees, I have to look at and say that was brought up in the height of a political season.
Sure.
And was addressed at that time. So we're moving beyond that at this point, and I'm glad that we've had the opportunity to discuss it. But I continue to focus on what I think is incredibly important to this community, and that is to make sure that people are working, have the opportunity to work, and we're making great strides in that realm as well.
The last question on this, then. That's the situation with your husband, and I understand that. But, you know, were there anyone else in your family who had fees waived?
Well, we are looking at that and assessing that situation. And if there were fees that were waived, then they will be paid back, given the state ruling.
Okay. You've had a couple of important appointments. And when it comes to job creation, Comita has gotten a close look this year for a number of reasons. So I wanted to ask you about, how you feel about Comita now, in terms of whether that agency is structured how you want it. Is it transparent? Is it going to do the role for this community that people want after everything that it's gone through this year with some resignations and new appointments?
Well, Comita is, you know, doing really well. I've got to tell you, you know, even prior to this year, unfortunately, with the climate, the taxation climate in the state of New York, there are times when taxpayer dollars are used to incentivize businesses to locate here or expand here. And so the Comita benefits are something that companies may need, again, to either stay here or expand here. But as I look at 2016, we have done some tremendous things. We have a great Comita board. The prior board did great work as well in making sure that businesses remain viable, that people remain employed, and we expanded businesses here. The new board is doing quite well as well. I did hire a new economic development director. That's Jeff Adair. And his number two person is Mark Geis, who comes out of Chautauqua County. And we are just doing some really terrific things through our economic development agency. It was one of the main focuses of my campaign, and certainly one of the main focuses of 2016. And I am happy to report that we're making great strides. Jeff comes with great business experience and acumen. He was responsible for one of the region's regional areas for one of the largest baked good companies in the country. He has great business experience, great business contacts, and certainly he knows how to interact with people in this community, having been a political figure and an elected official in the community for many years. His appointment was met with really interestingly great compliments from many people in our community, both sides of the aisle, people in business as well, and I'm just thrilled that he's on board. Mark Geis comes from Chautauqua County, also from their Economic Development Agency there, and together, I'll tell you what, they're just going out there and they're just gangbusters going forward. They have been starting a new program, actually meeting with all of the town supervisors throughout the county. By the end of the year, they will have met with all of the town supervisors in an effort to have a more coordinated look at what do individual towns need from a business development standpoint. Are there ways that we can help them and have that kind of dialogue? It's been very, very productive, and I'm glad that Jeff and Mark are going down that path. It's something that was needed for a long time, had not been done for a long time. The towns love it. I know that they have met with the town of Irondequoit. I believe they've also met with the town of Brighton, as well as at least 15 other towns as well in this community. So that's great. They've been able to secure additional jobs here in this community, and certainly they were part and parcel of the Maximus announcement. They were part and parcel of the American Packaging announcement that was made just a few months ago. American Packaging, as I know your listeners know, they were looking to actually leave this community. They have a location on Driving Park. They employ several hundred people at that location. They were looking to leave. And through some great collaborative efforts between the County of Monroe, the State of New York, and some private individuals as well, American Packaging decided to stay here in Monroe County, not only at their Driving Park location, but also to expand and open up a new location as well, employing many people in this community. And that is really part of the responsibility of my economic development team. I'm really, really pleased with the great work that they are doing in 2016, but I certainly don't want to slight the work that was done before I got here by our Comita staff and our economic development team. They work hard each and every day to make sure that there's economic opportunity for the people here in this community, and I think they're doing quite well.
Now, I know you know your friends in the Democratic side of the legislature were more critical of the Jeff Adair appointment. They said that, you know, you had a national search and you ended up appointing a political ally. That was what Cindy Cayley said, to a plum job, in her words, a six-figure salary. And so let's just talk about that for a bit here. Was it a national search?
It was a national search.
How many candidates did you have?
We had over a dozen candidates. We did have a candidate from the West Coast. We had candidates from the East Coast as well, and regional candidates. I certainly will not be sharing their names because some of them are people who are still employed here in the County of Monroe as well. But Jeff really rose to the top of the applicant pool. There's no question about it. He brought all of the necessary ingredients, relationships with people in this community, extensive business experience, and I think he has certainly shown his worth by what he has done in the few months that he has been on board as our Chief Economic Development Director. And again, his expertise in the business field and his ability to work with people throughout the community will continue to produce great results for people here in Monroe County. And the addition of Mark Geis, again, from Chautauqua County, the two of them together, I call them the dynamic duo. There's a reason for that. They're just doing great work. And certainly everyone in that economic development team as well is doing fine work on behalf of the people here in the community. And for your listeners, you should feel confident that they are going forward in a very positive and transparent way. And I'm very pleased with the work that they have been able to accomplish to date.
Do you understand why some listeners may think, you know, you had a national search and the issue with Comita was it politicized? You had people resigning from the board and the person you appointed was a political ally. Now, Jeff may be very qualified, but couldn't there have been somebody who is also qualified who wasn't also a political ally that might make people feel like they're a little more detached, it's a little less insidery?
Well, I can assure you that the appointment of Jeff Adair was not because he was a political ally. All of my appointments, whether we look at Dr. Michael Mendoza, who is heading our Department of Public Health, I had never met him before coming here to county government. He's doing a fine job. You know, certainly look at Dr. Nadia Granger, who is heading up our medical examiner's office. I have a prior relationship with her and appointed her as the head of a very important position, the medical examiner. You know, we can go down the line, and I can tell you that each appointment that I make is based on qualifications. And Jeff's qualifications really rose far above others that we looked at in conjunction with the economic development director. His expertise is unparalleled. And it's interesting that I know that people are saying, well, he came from a political role. Yes, he was the president of the county legislature, but he comes from an enormous business background. And that business background of being such a big part of a company that has a national presence and has a presence in the food industry, which is very big in this area as well, was actually met with welcome arms from people in our community who come out of the food and agricultural business, from our MCC president, from our chamber president. People were very supportive of the selection of Jeff Adair because of what his reputation says to this community. He is a stellar candidate. He's doing a great job as the economic development director.
All right, let me grab Marcy and Spencerport next up. Go ahead, Marcy.
Yes, hi. Good
afternoon. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. My question is the Office of Public Integrity up and running? And if not, when will it be?
Thank you for the question about the Office of Public Integrity. So the Office of Public Integrity was also an office that I wanted to create. I talked about it during the campaign, and I had told the residents here in the community that I was hopeful that it would be up and running by the end of the first year of me being in office, and it is up and running. It is headed by Chief David Moore. His office is located in the Times Square building at 45 Exchange Street. It was incredibly important to me that the Office of Public Integrity be at a location outside of the county office building so that people who worked either in county government or were residents of the county of Monroe would be able to relay concerns and have discussions with the Office of Public Integrity in a setting that they felt confident in and that would be remain confidential and outside of the purview of the rest of county government. So that office is up and running and is located at 45 Exchange Street. And is also responsible for overtaking and has overtaken the responsibilities and duties of our whistleblower hotline as well. So I want to make sure that people are aware of that. That is something that is in the purview of the Office of Public Integrity as well. So I'm thrilled that, again, I want to thank the legislature for their help in ensuring that we were able to create this office in my first year. As county executive, it did take legislation in order to do that. And so the very first few months of me being county executive, we worked in bipartisan manner in the legislature to get that legislation passed. Thereafter, the legislation was passed. We did search for the director of the Office of Public Integrity. David Moore was chosen. He then had to be approved by the legislature, which happened, and he has opened up his office and is functioning currently. So we're really glad about that. I'm glad that we were able to fulfill that campaign promise within the first year.
All right, one more listener question, and then we'll wrap up with Cheryl's final thoughts on her first year. Josh, Bob, and I've got a handful of folks on Twitter saying they felt like I should have followed up and just asked you. You said that if your own family members had fees waived, that you were assessing that and that you would follow up with this and have it paid back. And they just want to know, how is that happening? You know, how long is the process of trying to figure out if your own family members had fees waived, et cetera? So that's from Bob, Josh, and several others.
Well, I appreciate that question. What we're hearing out in the community is that notifications that were being sent by the current county clerk. We're coming in stages, and we're just assessing that as we go forward. So that is the best that I can give you right now. And certainly for anybody who may have received a letter or may still receive a letter. That's an individual decision for each individual to decide whether they will be responding or how they will respond to a letter should they receive one.
Were you actively waiving fees for your family, I think is what they want to try to understand.
Well, one of the things that I think your listeners need to know is that with respect to the function of the county clerk's office, when people come in for services, they are being served by members of the office for certain
staff members,
of course. And you know, I didn't work the front line. You're laughing, but no, I mean, you know, that wasn't what my role was. I certainly oversaw the operation, and I take responsibility for that, of course. But as far as you know, what was going on, and who had a fee actually waived. There was a policy in effect that if there was a customer service concern, certainly we could waive fees, and there were other instances as well. And as people are receiving those letters, if they wish to respond and however they wish to respond, that is certainly a personal decision. But I will go back to, I was really glad that, you know, under my administration as county executive, that we proactively reached out to the State Department for guidance on how that rule was to be applied, knowing full well that there were conflicting applications and procedures that were followed not only in the county of Monroe, but in other areas as well.
20 seconds. Your biggest accomplishment in your first year was what? What do you think it was?
Well, I think the biggest accomplishment in my first year was certainly keeping faith with the people here in this community to make sure that we had our eye on finances, that we have kept the tax rate flat, and we focus on jobs, making sure that people in this community are working, have the ability to continue to work and be productive in this community for many, many years.
You're enjoying the work?
I love the work, and every day I am thankful for the opportunity to serve this community and looking for additional ways to continue to do great work on behalf of each and every person in Monroe County.
There's a lot going on in this county, and I always enjoyed the conversation and how generous you are with your time. I hope you come back, and we'll talk to you again
soon. I will, too. Thank you for the chance. I appreciate it, and happy holidays to you and your family and to all of your listeners as well.
You got it. That's Monroe County Executive Cheryl Donolfo with us for the hour. Thanks for all the interaction with our listeners, Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon, and we'll talk with you Friday on member-supported public radio.